This episode of Café de René has been brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped, the number one choice in men's below-the-belt grooming. Featuring the new and improved Lawnmower 4.0 with a built-in LED light, ceramic blade for a closer cut, and also completely waterproof. To get that, but also including the rest of the package, including your ball deodorant, t-shirt, free boxes, weed whacker, please head over to manscaped.com, use the code CAFE. Not only will you get all that, you will also get free shipping and also 20% off. So yep, please head over to Manscaped, use the code CAFE, and your balls will thank you.
Bonjour, welcome to another edition of Café de René. I am the third wheel today, James Thompson, joined once again by the star of the show, Mr. René Dupree. And René, not only a great friend of yourself, but a great friend of myself as also, but please introduce him to everyone.
Well, during the 2003 Raw era, there was one guy that I always got along with, always professional, just a great person, Maven Huffman. What's going on?
What's up, René? We were chatting a little bit before we went live, and I was, you know, telling James the feeling's mutual. And if you know anything, you know, obviously this was during the era of, you know, the Attitude Era was coming to an end, but there were still a lot of the people from that era. René came in as a 19-year-old kid with the body of a 29-year-old man, just muscular and jacked, and then on top of it, he was athletic, and, you know, coming from the family he came from, he could work, and that scared a lot of people. And the reason I knew that is because I saw it 2 years prior when I came off of Tough Enough, and I had so much heat and people not liking me just for the avenue for which I got to wrestling. So René, I always had nothing but respect for you. I probably hated you a little bit because I didn't know how you could keep that physique you kept, you know, 365 days of the year. But I enjoyed working with you. I think your very first run with La Resistance, I think we were doing some tag matches together at house shows. And I always thought they were great matches. You were easy to work. You never had a problem with anything. You always came up with great stuff to do during the matches. Dude, I couldn't be happier to be on your show, and couldn't be happier to be reunited with you.
With that being said, we need a word from our sponsors. Gold Bond.
I was wondering how long it was going to take.
So there's a story behind this.
There is.
One day I think it was a Raw TV, and then, you know, showering up, and then everybody's, you know, and then Maven looks at me and goes, "René, I got a tip for you. Gold bond your balls. Just gold bond your balls, man." I was like, "Really? Gold bond your balls?" And then you gave me some, and I tried it, and holy Christ, it changed my life forever. For all the boys out there, once you're done showering, give yourself a little gold bond on your balls.
Yeah, on your boys. How good does it feel?
Oh, it's the best feeling in the world.
And when you first start doing it, it stings at first, but you know, that's how you know it's working.
Actually, we got a sponsor now, Maven. It's Manscaped. Yeah, Manscaped. Okay. Yeah. It's like a self-grooming kit, and it comes with this ball deodorant.
Really?
So, yeah, I've kind of put the gold bond aside, and now I use the Manscaped ball deodorant after I get out of the shower. It's amazing.
If I had a sponsor, I would use whatever the sponsor wanted to send me.
It's pretty awesome.
So let's talk about your career, man. Like,
that should be a good.
What got you to Tough Enough? Was it you saw an ad or something, or they seek you out, or how did it work?
Yeah, actually, you're 100% right. I was the biggest wrestling fan, you know, on the planet, you know, and coming from the late 90s. I mean, the WWF and WCW wars of the 90s, to me, that was at the end of my college career. And to me, there was no better television on a Monday or a Thursday night. We actually, in my house in college, we had two TVs, and this was before the days of flat screens. This was back when TVs were, you know, thick and chunky. We had two TVs stacked on top of each other, and whichever program was better at the time got the sound. And we would literally watch Raw and SmackDown at the same time. So just being a huge fan, and, you know, I was always a fan of The Rock and what he was doing in the late 90s. And, you know, and funny enough, a big fan of Goldberg until you get in the ring with him and you're like, hey, you don't know what he's doing.
Oh, I know.
You don't know what he's doing. But, like, just being a huge fan. After college, I was a school teacher, teaching sixth grade, and never, if you would have asked me in 2000 how to become a wrestler, I literally would, it would have been like, how do you become an astronaut? I have no earthly idea, you know, because, you know, where I lived, there was not really any wrestling schools. I hadn't looked into it. And I was watching Raw one fateful night, and I heard JR, you know, say it, have you ever wanted to be a wrestler? And I'm like, yes, I have. And my buddy looks over at me and he's like, this is for you. Renee, no lie, we got the stuff for Tough Enough. And I made a video, and I'm not kidding you, Renee. It's on the Tough Enough DVDs. It's quite possibly the most god-awful thing you've ever seen. Renee, I'm serious. I open up, I'm reading the torch. Like, that's to me, in my mind, oh, yes, yes. In my
the
mind.
BW I'm torch?
Yes, like the- yes.
You might.
In my mind, that was like the best idea ever. I'm like, oh, they're not going to think I'm a mark. You know, right. That's the biggest sign that I'm a mark. Renee, I'm reading the torch, and I act like my buddy interrupted me. I'm like this. Oh, you know, and I go into my spiel. It's so god-awful, and I have no idea why they called me, but they did. And like I was telling, I told James before when they called me, I thought it was a joke. I thought my buddy was playing a joke on me, and I hung up on him. They luckily called me back, and I came out here to New York, and well, the rest is history, I guess. But
well, you're originally from the South?
Originally from Virginia. Well, born in Tennessee, raised in Virginia, Southern boy my entire life. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell me what that. Did they fly you out to New York to film, or was it California? What
when we filmed Tough Enough? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
So I spent the first weekend here in New York, and it was 2 days of you know, a pretty intense interview process. And on the second day, they actually came to me. And because it was an MTV, you know, production, if you remember, MTV. Yeah. And the MTV people pulled me aside and they asked me, they said, do you want to be a wrestler or do you want to be on TV? Because those are two totally different things. And but they had, you know, Real World and Road Rules was big at the time. They told me, they said, if you want to just be on TV, we can actually set you up to be on the next season of Real World or Road Rules. And I was like, nah, I wanted to be a wrestler. Like, that was my goal. And I'm still happy. You know, I didn't give a shit about MTV or anything. I literally, at that time, I wanted nothing more than to get, you know, just get into that world, get into the professional wrestling world, and just try to do what I literally loved more than anything on a weekly basis. Once Tough Enough, you know, I think I went home. I had like a week to prepare to quit my job. You know, when people ask me about Tough Enough, how hard Tough Enough was hard, but I quit my job, sold my car, and canceled the lease on my apartment. I wasn't quitting. I was not quitting. And I was going to see it through. That's for sure. They flew us out the following week to New York, drove us up in the show we filmed in Stamford, Connecticut. Probably a good hour up the road from me right now.
So tell me about the actual contest. Like, I get the seasons confused because I remember were you on the season that they sent you over to like Antarctica, or was that a different season?
No. Well, you see, remember, we were season one. And so, you know, our season was, I, for all intents and purposes, was a trial just to see if this show had legs and if it was something that was feasible, right. If it was something that, you know, the people would want. Our season was very basic. We had Al Snow as our main trainer. We had Jackie and Tori that were there on a daily basis. And then Taz would come, you know, once or twice a week when because he was still, you know, Taz was still at the time wrestling a full schedule, a full on, four nights, you know, three house shows and then one TV night a week. And then he would come and, you know, do stuff with us once a week. Our season was very basic. The one trip they did take us on, they took us, which, you know, I'm sitting here acting like this is, you know, the only trip they took us on. They took us to the Bahamas, which was cool. I had never been to the Bahamas, you know, at that time. But, you know, my season was, obviously, Nydia was the female winner. And the thing I remember about my season, Renee, was 13 people started and eight quit. Quit the damn, like, this is their dream. This is what they wanted more than anything until it gets hard. And people quit. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Right. So tell me, man. Okay, so you win the contest. And the first time I met you was in Cincinnati, HWA.
Yeah.
Is that where they sent you after you won?
Immediately, yeah. Not immediately. I win the contest, and they, even before they sent me to HWA, I did 3 weeks of TV. I wrestled Taz for the next 3 weeks, but I only did 1 week of house shows. And on those house shows, I wrestled Raven. And at the time, I mean, I'm as green as it gets. And Raven's wanting to call everything in the ring, which later in my career, I realized as a wrestler, you want to get to the point to where the least you have called backstage is going to help you out so much, and the better your matches is going to be. But when you're starting your career, that's the most terrifying place to be, because you have no clue what's going to happen. And Raven guided me through. He truly led me through those matches. When I say we had nothing, Renee, we had nothing called. We didn't even have hope spots. We didn't have, you know, the heat call. We had nothing. And he led me through it. And he truly proved that he could work with the worst in the world, because I was not good at the time. And but I worked for 3 weeks on TV, and then they sent me to HWA, to Cincinnati. HWA.
Yeah. So let's talk about HWA. Did you enjoy your time there? Any good stories?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what developmental is like now, but what I do know is when I was in HWA, we had an all-star cast at HWA, and then 2 hours up the road at OVW. I mean, at HWA with me, there was Jamie Noble, Umaga, Rosie, you know, 3 Minute Warning, Charlie Haas, his brother Russ Haas, who passed away tragically there at HWA the night after a show. You know, we had Easy Money. I would say a group of probably 20 guys, 15 made it to TV. And then 2 hours down the road at OVW, they had, you know, Batista, Randy Orton, Brock, Shelton Benjamin. You know, it was just, I tell people, I don't know what developmental's like now or since, but and then you came, and the old Sly came, and we had Rob Conway. Rob Conway was at OVW. I don't know what it's like now or what it's been like since, but I guarantee you that was probably the best just wealth of talent that WWE ever had.
Well, that was the last 20 years of main eventers right there.
Bingo. Right. Yeah. Yeah. John Cena. I mean, think about it. At OVW at one time, you had Randy Orton, John Cena, Batista, and Brock Lesnar at one time. Like, think about that. Like, that's, like you said, that's 20 years of almost probably 80% of their pay-per-views. right there at OVW at one time.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it was very like now, apparently, like in they got a Florida NXT. I guess it's like NFL training type facility.
Have you seen it? Have you seen it?
I just seen pictures. I've never been there.
I was there. I can actually tell you the date I was there because I remember. I went down there to interview at the facility for an announcing position on March the 11th of 2020. The day the pandemic shut everything down in this country, I was in Orlando interviewing for an announcing position. They took me around the whole, it's ridiculous. What they have a world-class gym. They have, I remember in HWA, we had one ring set up and it was as grungy as anything you've ever seen. They have rings set up all over the place. Renee, they have a ring that they only shoot promos out of. It's not even a working ring. You don't get it to work. Yeah, it's just for promos. Like, think about that. And then think about what we went through. It's truly, it looks like, you described it perfectly. It looks like an NFL facility. It really does. And it's offices set up down there. And just, I know they have nutritionists. They have beauticians, people to get haircuts and stuff. All that stuff when we were coming up. There are tattoo artists short away from having every need met in this one facility. You know, and that stuff when we were in developmental, literally you had to go do everything on. You had to find a place to train, you had to find a gym, you had to get all of your supplements and stuff. They have everything there. You can tell they put their money into it to hopefully, you know, I guess, you know, get a return on it. I don't watch the program enough to know if they do, but they've definitely made the investment in the right spots for sure.
So let's talk about when you finally like started full time on the roster. You said when you got there, you weren't welcome with open arms at first, were you?
Hey, well, open arms, no. you know what though? Like any business you go into, you have to earn the respect of your colleagues. That's true. I don't care what you do, you have to. It just so happens that we're in a business that earning respect to your colleagues can get the hell beat out of you. You know?
Yeah. Right.
And real quick, getting back to HWA, you'll love this. So once I did start going on the road, you know how like everybody they tell you when you can leave developmental?
Yeah.
They never told me. I just never went back. I just
never flew under the radar.
Yo, they never gave me shit for it. So I literally, because Easy Money, I was living with him and he called me like a year into it. He's like, man, I'm leaving this apartment. You got to come get your shit. And I was I just never went back. I was like, if they're not going to say anything, I'm not going back because I hated being on the road for 4 days and then having to go and do that. It was just,
train.
Yeah, it was so tough. But, you know, you have to always, I don't care what business you're in, you have to get the respect of your colleagues. My first, I think, probably 3 or 4 weeks, they put me on house shows with Hardcore Holly. You know, the way they break guys in. And, you know, Holly is known, he's stiff. But like I said, I never minded it because the only thing he ever yelled at me for was not being stiff enough back with him. Holly was the guy that he's going to lay it in, but he wants you to hit him in return. And over time, it's funny because I remember Devon and Bubba had a match and they come off, they come down through Gorilla and I'm standing there, you know, cause the monitor's up where we're watching. And I look over at Devon and I'm like, great match. And he went and just walks away. What the hell do you know?
Bubba?
No, not Devon. Bubba. Not Bubba. Devon.
No Devon. Shit.
Yes, the nice
really?
One.
Really?
Yeah, the nice one. And it's funny because now Devon's one of my closest friends on earth. And we still to this day laugh at it. But it's just you have to earn the respects of your colleagues. And it's a weird, you know, way to earn the respects of your colleagues by going out there busting your ass and then coming back and not complaining about it. I never came back and complained about a thing. I dislocated my shoulder in a match And I never told anybody. I just kept working because I wasn't going to be the guy who was brand new going out and getting on being hurt, you know, and it's just, you know, but that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you have to do in that business.
Well, let's talk about injuries. Like you said, you separate your shoulder, and again, you don't want to complain about it. You keep working every night, right? Even though you're in pain. We don't have to, we can edit this out if you don't want to talk about, like, I have had struggles with addictions and stuff. I don't know if are you comfortable talking about it?
100%. Okay. Yes.
So, we mentioned Goldberg. I had a pre-tape with Goldberg, right? And we did five takes where he's like broke a flag over my shoulder, ended up separating my collarbone.
I remember it.
Right. Okay. So, you know, I had to get a cortisone shot. And then, again, you don't want to complain. You don't want to, you know, you're new. So you have to, so let's like, I developed a habit, like a lot of guys, especially during our era did, right? Yeah. So would you like to open up about that? And not only that, how did you overcome it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, overcome it. That's going to be, it'll be something that I battle for the rest of my life, Renee. It'll literally be something that, because to this day, I still can't walk into a pharmacy without, not my eyes will automatically go back. Even if I'm in there for a gallon of milk, my eyes will funnel back to where the pharmacist is for the thousands of prescriptions I have picked up, thousands in my days. We unfortunately, or maybe fortunately at the time, we thought, came up in a time when whatever we wanted was the Wild West. Yes. I mean, I remember taking my MRIs to a doctor and have him saying, what do you want? You know, wow. Not here's what I'm going to prescribe you, but what do you want?
It was so easy.
Renee, and I'll be perfectly honest with you. I mean, at I would say the height of my addiction, I was getting 240, Percocets a week and running out within 5 days. I mean, just literally just popping them. But the problem with me is I was functional on them. I was taking them and going on and doing 2 hours of live television on HSN, you know, and actually probably doing the best job imaginable. So
it brings you up.
Absolutely. And for those 2 hours that I'm standing there, I'm not feeling my lower back tightening up and everything. And I'm not feeling my neck starting to, you know, just, you know, need to be popped or something. And I can actually, you know, live normal. So I'm perfectly open and honest with it. It took literally an arrest. And I got arrested in 2012 for doctor shopping. I was working four different doctors getting that exact same script. I was getting 240, perks every week from four different doctors. And it finally,
that's close to 1,000 pills a week.
And running out. A thousand for the month.
For a month. And running out.
And running out. On day five, I would run out. Literally, on day five, I would run out, Renee. And but here's the craziest thing about it. I never bought anything illegal. I wasn't the guy that was searching the guy out because I didn't need to. I had the MRIs that if I walked into a doctor's office, he literally would do this. He would look at him and look at me and be like,
what do you need?
Yeah, what do you need, kid? And it was too, and you know, this was before everything was scheduled one and two, and you know, they were trying to pump it out. Doctors wanted to sell it because, you know, they made more money off the pharmaceutical companies. So me walking into them was a money maker for them.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No, I saw a commercial when OxyContin first came out.
Yeah.
It's like these two older people running through the fields of flowers and everything is beautiful and shit. Oh. Well, let's fast forward and see how many people that shit killed. Right.
Or led
down to heroin.
Oh yeah, well, and I'm very fortunate that it never led me down that path. But here's where it did lead me. It would lead me to days when I didn't have anything and I would wake up and my only objective for that entire day would be, what doctor can I go see? How can I go see? Okay, I saw him last week and this guy's out of town. Maybe I'll just go see a new one. And that's no way to live. And I lost a really good job. You know, I lost HSN from that. I was the sports host on HSN, probably the best job I've ever had. I was working 2 days a week and making good money. And, you know, that I lost that in 2012. You know, it's life. I'm not going to ever blame anything. I'm the one that did it. No one for you. No one held me down and shoveled anything in my mouth. I did it. But, you know, it's and I would say, you know, and going to rehab and everything, you know, it's definitely not where I saw my life heading when I started my career. But the more and more that you're in this business, you realize there was nothing special about me. I was just the next one.
Right.
But right. Renee, in all seriousness, my arrest probably saved my life.
Because so that was that was your rock bottom, obviously.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. It was my house was foreclosed on. I lost my job and I had to move from the beachfront house that I had in Florida. If that's not a rock bottom, I don't know what is.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's as low as I could have imagined getting. But again, think about this. 240 a week and I was running out. This is in 2000. This is 10 years ago. Would I be alive if I would have stayed on that trajectory? Nah, no way. No way. No way.
So did you contact the WWE wellness program? Is there anyone that helped you out?
They actually contacted me, offered. Any assistance. And I will give them credit. They contacted me probably within, I would say, 48 hours of the arrest, offered me any assistance that I wanted. And I'm very grateful for that. Yeah. I found a doctor that, you know, listened to me, was willing to help me get off of it, you know, with use of Suboxone. It worked. It still took a good year to just retrain my piece. Once the physical, you know, withdrawals leave you, that doesn't even start the mental aspect of it, because that's the hardest to kick. And that's what still to this day, and I swear, to this day, I swear, if I walk into a pharmacy to pick up a gallon of milk, to pick up anything, a loaf of bread, my eyes are still fixated on the back and remembering those times of not only walking into a pharmacy, but running to the back, dropping off a script, and them saying, would you like, I'll wait. Before they can get it out. You want to come back? I'll wait. I would literally tell them. And then still remembering how happy I was when they called my name.
Yeah.
And going.
That euphoric feeling, you know.
And Renee, here's the craziest thing about it. What probably helped me more than anything is I was doing this without health insurance. So I was a self-pay. Now you know how much I was spending on that. Yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy life, man. It's a crazy life, you know.
It's like that amount on the street, 1,000 pills. Are you're looking at? Was it 5 milligram Percocets?
Ten.
10?
Yeah,
dude, that's like 10 grand. That's 10 grand worth on the street.
Easily.
Yeah. Fuck.
But you know what? If someone would have came up and offered me that, I wouldn't have sold it because I needed them.
That just shows people how addicting this shit is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So again, like the worst time in my life definitely probably helped save me. And you know, it led me to where I'm at now. And, you know, I mean, I was a kid, you know, I was in my 30s then, and I'm in my mid 40s now. And I'm happy to be here. It shows me that God for me works in mysterious ways. You know?
Dude, you got a view of the World Trade Center from a fucking office in New York City, working at Wall Street. You still look as good as you did when you were in your 20s.
Hey,
nice suit on. Jesus Christ.
Not
I'm
bad.
Sure. Look at that. Look at that. Hey, but one question, Maven.
Yeah.
Did you gold bond your balls this morning?
Renee, when I get out of the shower, that's the third thing I do. Deodorant.
James, got any other questions?
Oh, that's good.
James, I'm sorry we got. Hey, James, I'm sorry we got so real there for a second. But
no,
I know Renee's open. I know Renee's open to his struggles in life. And to be honest with you, I love that about him, and I'm the same way. Because I think authenticity and realness can only be help others when we talk about stuff like this. Because if anyone wants to push that stuff under the rug, I get it. You know, do you? That's not me. And I know that's not you.
No, no. It's like, I guess the little bit of celebrityism that we've had, you know, a tiny bit, whatever.
Yeah.
Since we're public figures in a way, it's good to, because dude, this opiate addiction crisis in North America is out of control.
Out of control.
It's out of control.
Yeah. And I don't see it ending anytime soon.
Oh my God, dude, there's this fentanyl stuff that's come out, right? And now they got this carfentanyl. Carfentanyl is a elephant tranquilizer that some of these drug dealers are putting into shit. An elephant tranquilizer. Think about that.
I had no clue about that.
Oh, Jesus.
I've never even heard about that.
Yep, wow. It's insane.
But that's one of the biggest pleasures of doing this podcast with Renee, because yourself, Maven, and Matt Morgan, you're so open about having them struggles with addiction. And I know you said it's an everyday thing, but getting onto the, you know, overcoming it to a point where you're leading such a great life now. And for me, as a fan of the two of you, and like Matt Morgan and all of you, it's a pleasure for myself to hear these stories of yourself overcoming these troubles.
Like I said, again, I don't consider myself overcoming them. I consider myself living with it.
Because, yeah.
You know, the, I will have overcome it the day that I don't think about it in a day, and I don't ever see that happen, to be perfectly honest with you.
That's it. It's, like, it's good that you have that mentality, because it's one day at a time, and it just takes one slip to go back where you were. So it's good that you have that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a part of just humbling. I had to humble myself a lot to realize, you know, because, you know, Renee, we're, you know, when we're doing what we're doing out there in front of the crowd, we control so much of what they're thinking and feeling, and it kind of gets in your head. Just you start to believe your own hype a little bit. And then I realized there's one little white pill that controls my every action in life. And it's my true love, and I would literally do anything for. And that's the most powerful thing that I've ever had to deal with. So overcome, live with. I'll accept that. Live with.
Yeah.
Well, Renee, we spoke about on our recent John 18 episode about your experiences working with Tori. Have you heard Maven's story about Tori Wilson and he's kissing?
Oh, dude, give it to me. Give it to me, Tori. Come on.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I like, and you know how everybody's got their tastes, right? Everybody's got their, you know, some people like Stacey Keibler, some like Tori, some like Jackie, you know, whoever, whatever your taste is. Tori to me was always mine, just. She's like, God made nothing better looking in life than Tori Wilson, circa 1999 through 2004. To me, like just head to toe, that's as perfect as a specimen can get. And so, of course, my first main, you know, storyline involving a female, it has me with Tori Wilson. And, you know, this was during her time married to Billy.
Yeah.
And the story called for, you know, her giving me a kiss before I went out and wrestled Tajiri that night. And it was a real kiss on the lips, but a working kiss, you know, no tongue or nothing.
Right.
And with every take, I would kiss her. Billy was behind the cameras. And he would, every time I kiss her, he'd be like, hey, Maven, how's my dick taste? Every time. So if there's one thing that can make me want to kiss Tori Wilson a whole lot less.
Right.
Really having me
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man. Yeah, but Tori, I was, yeah. we did a segment on Cena, and I had a match against Tori, and I threw in a spot there where she goes to sunset flip me, and I dropped down on my knees for a pin, so I like teabagged her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I made sure to get that spot in there. That was my little game.
You're like, hey, listen, man, the office is telling me they want this in. This isn't my
right. Right. One question though, like Billy, they got a divorce. I mean, Jesus Christ. How could you fuck that up?
You Billy Kidman. You know what? I love
Billy to death and
great guy.
I'm sure, you know, that their paths were just heading in separate directions.
Yeah.
You know, but I never understood how they got together in the first place, to be honest. Like you and Tori Wilson, and you, like, I would expect her to be like dating The Rock or something, you know?
Right.
What's that kid's name? The long blonde hair. You know, somebody that it looks like you or something. And, you know, you got Billy. Billy's what, 5'10", 5'9", you know, a buck.
He's an overachiever.
He's a buck. Yeah, a buck 80. Great work. I don't know. Yeah, I love Billy to death. And
yeah, he was a great guy. Great worker too. He was
great really worker. Really, yeah. Great worker. And one of the we talked at the beginning of how, you know, people didn't necessarily welcome me in. He was one of the ones that did from day one. Welcomed me in. And I still remember the people that did that. And yeah. I could not be happier and that more thankful for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I heard recently, and I'm disappointed if this is true, you hated your theme song.
All right.
How dare you?
All right. Let me put this to bed. I didn't hate my theme song. It's just not necessarily what I would have chose for my music. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, you have no say in the music you're coming out to. That's all Vince in the office. Yeah. And they put a song out that I wouldn't have chose for me.
Right.
That's it. I don't hate. I love the band and it's just it's not what gets me hype,
right?
You know, I think of the music that you know, if I'm in the gym and I need to, it's leg day, or I need to get that extra set in, and I didn't sleep good, and I don't want to really be there. You know, that playlist I put on then, that's not it. Like that's all I was thinking.
Right.
But
you know, the only guy ever known that actually spoke up and got his music changed was Booker T.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he went to Vince and said, listen, man, because whatever he had before, he's like, I need my old theme song from, and they changed it.
Yeah, he had it changed, didn't he, at one point in 03 for a couple of months. I remember now, yeah. It was horrible.
It really
was horrible. It was horrible. I remember it now, yeah. When he was feuding with...
I gotta be honest, I never knew it was an option. I never knew going to him was an option.
Well, sometimes the squeak wheel gets the grease, you know, but maybe guys like me and you were just scared to you know.
The nail that sticks out is going to get hammered, I guess. I wouldn't have, like, and I feel bad because everybody loves that song and everyone can't believe that I don't like it. Again, it's not that I don't like it. It's just not me. That's it.
Right.
I can't see my fantasy. I love it.
And of course you're gonna sing it. Here's
like
I've never once been driving down the road in my truck and turned it on to listen to. Not one time.
No.
Never.
Oh shit. It's like I always liked Rob Van Dam's theme song, you know, One of a Kind.
Right.
He didn't really care for it, but fuck, that's one of my favorite theme songs.
Yeah, you know who's I like? I love Gold Dust's music. I love that. I liked Gangrel. I always thought had good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, Hunter, you know, I mean, having Motorhead do
that's the thing. Yeah. One of my favorite theme songs is Evolution, Line in the Sand.
Oh, how about that? Hey, how about that first DX, that DX?
Yeah.
That DX theme. Oh, that's some of the best music ever. That's some of the best. Bow to the Master. Like that, I have drove down the road listening to. So, yeah. I did.
So,
like that.
Did you ever get, like, how was, like, the higher ups when you came in? Like, oh, for example, like, you eliminated The Undertaker that one year in the Battle Royal, right?
Yeah. Was... Part of his idea.
No shit.
He was cool. He was so cool with it. Well, because Mark knew the way, like the people that operate our business with trying to pull the wool over people's eyes or believing their hype or, you know, this is my spot. You know, they don't know how business is done. Mark always knew the way in order to move the business along is I have to create stars.
That's it.
You know, if I go out and squash somebody in a match, what the hell have I done? I've beat a nobody. But if I build somebody and I build them up to a worthwhile opponent, then when I beat them, then I've done something. I've accomplished something. Yeah. And he knew, you know, I think what he knew and Shane knew was that coming off of Tough Enough, if you ever wanted a Tough Enough too, you better make sure that I was somewhat successful. And look, like I'm perfectly fine with openly. I was nowhere near the most successful person coming out of Tough Enough. But if I didn't have the success I had, you might not have had a Miz. You might not have had a Ryback. You might not have had a John Morrison. You know, you might not have had these guys that went on and did even more with the platform that I think I helped create, you know, and I hold my head up high for, you know, and Taker knew that. Taker knew that.
So, do you miss the business?
Yeah. I'd be lying if I said I didn't. And I don't watch, but I don't
It's hard to watch, huh? It's hard.
I don't watch in the same way I don't want to see my ex-girlfriend having sex with her husband.
Okay. Great analogy. Great analogy.
It's wrestling was the girl that broke up with me before I was done dating her, you know, and I will always view it as such. And I'll love her forever. I will love the business. Do I miss it? Absolutely. Crazy enough, man, I miss the backstage more than anything. I miss the just camaraderie with the boys. I miss the, you know, trying to find a gym when you land in Fresno or DeKalb or wherever. And then, you know, knowing that you have to get, you know, try to get a meal in and then get to the arena. I miss all that stuff. And I miss that feeling. Oh, my God. I used to hate Thursdays when I knew I had a 6 a.m. flight and go back on the road. It sucked. I got to do all this on Thursday. And what I wouldn't give to have one of those Thursdays again.
You know? Right.
Just to have one. Yeah. Because it wasn't a bad life, man. It wasn't a bad way to make a living, I'll tell you. It was pretty fun. And Renee, this is also the way I look at it. At a time in our lives, we had a job that 60 other men had. Think about that. Think about it that way. On the planet, there was what, 60 guys on that was hired by WWE that was on the road with both shows? Would you say that's about it?
About it, yeah.
We held that spot for years.
Right. And tens of thousands of people wanted that, you know?
Wanted it. Think of how many indie workers there are out there and how many wrestling shows there are on a daily basis. And we had a spot that of all the millions of people that I don't know. That's cool, you know? Right. And occasionally I still get recognized, not as much anymore, but when I do, it still humbles me. I'm still But it's so funny. People be like, hey man, are you Maven from wrestling? I'm like, yes, I am.
Right? But when you're really on TV, sometimes it gets annoying. So you try to keep incognito, right? But then after a few years, you're like, are you such and such? Yes, I am. Of course. Yeah.
I used to know when I could be like go out in my home gym. I would go at late at night when I knew no one was going to be in there to ask me stupid wrestling questions. And you know, because it did, it would get annoying. And you know, now I wear it as it's a badge of courage, you know,
right? You
know, badge of honor.
Well, James, it's you said 45 minutes, so you got anything to finish with?
Yes. First off, ask one more question, Maven, before you go. Funniest road story. Or even in Tough Enough. What was the, was it Farrell, the big guy in Tough Enough?
What was the what?
What was the name of the big guy in Tough Enough who Triple H?
Daryl?
Daryl.
Yeah, the one who's hanging out?
Tell that story, but what happened behind the cameras?
All right, I'll tell a better story than that because everybody's seen the nuts hanging out story. Daryl, what you see on Tough Enough, Daryl, Renee, I'm not kidding. This kid was one of the most arrogant sons of bitches I've ever came in contact with.
Really?
He was a 300 pound, literally looked like 300 pounds of chewed bubblegum. That's exactly what he looked like. And he stunk for a shoot, like legit smell. And he would be back, we would be back at the house, and he was the guy that was running around telling us how fucking athletic he was and how good, man, I'm going to do this. And yo, I'm in the ring with this so-and-so. And I remember one night, we're up in the room, and me and Nowinski and Josh, we checked him so quick. We were like, the only reason you're still here is because seven guys quit and they need to get a show out. That's the only reason you're here. Your day's coming. You're going to be out of here. Renee, he was horrible. He was unworkable. You know how, there's some big guys that can work and you're like, my God. Like, I used to wonder, Rosie, as big as he was, how the hell does he move more fluid than me?
Right. Yeah. Moonsaults and shit.
Yeah. Well, this guy was the polar opposite. Literally. With the two left feet and two left feet that stunk on top of it. we checked him one night. We checked him. I don't know what happened. I mean, I hope he's doing well, you know, but yeah, we definitely checked
him. You should have gave him the gold bond tip. Jesus.
I didn't know about the gold bond at the time, Renee.
Oh, really?
I did. Free gold bond. Yeah. I'm a work in progress, my friend.
Well, Maven, it was so good to see you again.
Likewise, brother.
Had this conversation.
Yeah.
No, I do these just to reconnect with people, and you were one of my favorites, and I'm so proud of you for you're in Wall Street in a suit, you clean yourself up, and you know what I mean?
And it's not the place I would have seen myself years ago, but I've always went through life with, if you keep an open mind and don't shut anything out, you don't know what you can get. So and here I am. Yeah.
I think you just gave me, along with the gold bond, that was the greatest quote I've heard in a long time. Thank you so much for another great quote, Maven.
Oh, brother, that's my pleasure. Hey, you still look like you're staying in pretty damn good shape. Are you still working?
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. With the pandemic, after I left the WWF 2007, I've been going to Japan. I've been going over there for 15 years. So I'm going back in April because they shut down the borders.
Right.
For the pandemic.
When you go over there, how much time do you spend over there?
Three to six months.
You just go over there 3 to 6 months. Wow.
Yeah.
But well, you probably get to work a style that's more suited to your
oh yeah, it's a very physical MMA type style, but it's less Hollywood. And I married a Japanese woman. I've been married for 13 years.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, man.
Good for you, brother.
Everything's going good. Everything's going good. But let's keep in touch, man. Let's keep in touch.
It sucks that we have to get older, but it's probably for the best.
C'est la vie. All right, my friend.
We'll definitely keep in touch, my friend.
Please, take care and good luck.
Likewise. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Thank you, James.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, David.